Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Are we really prepared to say that we're powerless in the face of such carnage? That the politics are too hard? Are we prepared to say that such violence visited on our children year after year after year is somehow the price of our freedom?
We will try to get an answer for you, Mr. President, on this program, at least a partial answer this morning. You know, anytime something like this happens, 9/11, Sandy, this, we get divided into two groups, those who are personally affected, whose lives will never be the same, and those who are emotionally moved but are watching from the outside. We will try to serve all of you, both groups of us, on the show today. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. For those of you in or near Newtown, Connecticut, our phones are open right now. And for this whole hour, for anything that's in your hearts and anything that's on your minds, if you're in or near Newtown or have any other personal connection to the shooting, call us and say whatever you want to say publicly at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll talk to Newtown pediatrician Dr. Alex Afshar, who had, I'm told, half these kids in his practice, coming up in just a few minutes. For everyone else, I think the sympathy and grief we feel turns more quickly to anger and a demand that something be done so there won't be a next time or won't be as many next times. You know, by Saturday, our Facebook page, and you might want to check it out because it's very emotional and there's a lot of wisdom there too. Our Facebook page was overflowing with comments from many of you on how you started out sad on Friday, but by the time you woke up Saturday morning, you had begun to get more angry and that something has to change. President Obama at last night's interfaith memorial service tried to walk that line for both groups, the grieving family in the pews, and the rest of the country wondering what next for America. We played that rhetorical question just a moment ago that the president asked that I think is going to set up a new debate. But also, one of the most powerful moments came when he read the first names of all 20 children who were killed. They deserve to be heard.
Charlotte, Daniel, Olivia, Josephine, Anna, Dylan, Madeline, Catherine, Chase, Jesse, James, Grace, Emily, Jack, Noah, Caroline, Jessica, Benjamin, Avliel, Allison.
Mr. Cool, Barack Obama, losing it again, or at least fighting to contain it, as he had to do in his public appearance on Friday. That was at the Interfaith Memorial Service last night, reading the first names of all 20 children killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School. I wanted all of you to hear them re-aired this morning. So this hour, we'll talk about issues raised by the shooting, and we'll have a community call-in for whatever is on your minds or whatever is in your hearts if you're in the immediate Newtown area. Once again, we will save a few lines for anyone in that area who will get first priority at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll speak to pediatrician Dr. Afshar in just a couple of minutes. But while your calls are coming in, Richard Hake is here now from our newsroom with the latest on the investigation. Hi, Richard.
Brian, yes. Well, the big story right now that we're covering are the funerals that are beginning to happen. You know, if you saw some of the pictures from Newtown, Connecticut, you see stuffed animals and balloons and candles in, you know, shrines throughout the town of Newtown. Well, today they're going to lay to rest 6-year-old Jack Pinto. Now, Jack was a New York Giants fan, and his parents say that they may actually bury him in wide receiver Victor Cruz's jersey. And Cruz was so touched by this, he actually wrote the child's name on his cleats during last night's game. The other boy, six-year-old Noah Posner, he liked to figure out how things worked mechanically. His uncle told the Associated Press he was just a really lively, smart kid. He would have become a great man. He would have grown up to be a great dad.
And these are the first two funerals, as you say. Of course, I don't know any of these families' backgrounds, but Posner is a Jewish-sounding name. And the Jewish tradition is to bury your dead on the day after they die, if they can. In this case, considering the circumstances, you know, all the families waited till at least now. The Catholic tradition is to wait longer and have a wake, and wakes are beginning this week. Just from a faith tradition standpoint, perhaps why that's why that funeral is taking place today.
And also, we have to think about the other children and the other residents of Newtown, Connecticut, and for that matter, everywhere else, because this is also a day where kids are returning to school. This is a time where parents have to tell their other children basically what happened. Michelle Garrity's family knows three of the children who were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and she said she waited until yesterday to tell her own three children about it, and their reaction was fear.
My children are scared that this is going to happen again, and they want to know how they're going to, Mommy, how are you going to be safe in school? Is this going to happen again? And I don't know what to tell. I don't have an answer to that.
She says her six-year-old son played baseball with two of the children who died, and they knew a third from church. And a personal story of mine, my sister, who is a kindergarten teacher, said that the first thing she's going to do this morning is hug all of her students.
Yeah, no kidding. And for me, you know, on the subway into the station this morning, a few stops after mine, on came a dad and his little boy, about 6 years old, and I was momentarily floored. I was not prepared for my own reaction, even as much as I've been involved with this over the weekend and as strongly as I've been feeling for the families already. This was the first kid of this age that I had seen since the incident. And, you know, yes, I went home Friday night and hugged my own school kid with a little extra feeling, but he's 14. And there was something about seeing this innocent little six-year-old that stopped my heart. And on his way to school, no doubt, this morning, did he know about Sandy Hook? Did his easy assumption that school is the safest place in the world outside his home come into question today? I can only imagine how his dad standing there next to him must have been feeling. Parents of kids around that age, what has this weekend been like for you?
And Brian, another story that we're following here in New York City, at least Mayor Bloomberg, who appeared on NBC's Meet the Press over the weekend, he's having an event today at City Hall. He's going to have 34 video statements from individuals who either survived or lost a family member to gun violence. Now, that number, 34, is a symbolic number, according to the mayor, because that's what's estimated as the number of Americans killed on an average day from guns. Now, we have a piece of tape. Here's Mayor Bloomberg speaking on NBC's Meet the Press, where he says this happens again and again.
We kill people in schools, we kill them in hospitals, we kill them in religious organizations, we kill them when they're young, we kill them when they're old, and we just got to stop this.
Again, that's Mayor Bloomberg on this weekend's Meet the Press. He said, for a start, military-style assault rifles should be banned and existing gun laws should be enforced more aggressively.
And we will spend a good deal of this hour talking about some of that debate. Of course, there were Republicans on television yesterday saying every school principal should have a weapon. And if the principal in this case did, then maybe she wouldn't have died. Maybe the gunman would have died, taking fewer lives. Richard, we'll check in with you later.
Okay, Brian.
And with us now is pediatrician Dr. Alex Afshar from Newtown. We're told his practice includes half of the children who were killed on Friday. Dr. Afshar, I'm honored that you would give us some time today. Welcome to WNYC.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And tell us about your practice and who of these families are in it.
So we are the largest family practice office in Newtown, and more than 50% of those children and their parents are our patients or were our patients. We've served this community for over 30 years, so we are very, very involved. Newtown is a very large town with a small community. And as you notice, they're very, very close, and their love among each other is apparent right now.
I understand that you've been working at a crisis center set up after the shootings. What have you been doing?
Well, we went to the crisis center as a team to offer as much assistance as we could. However, the crisis center right now, being run by Danbury Hospital, they are, you know, they've got more than enough to handle. So we are kind of just on the standby, and they will call us when the need arises, which is going to be in the next few days.
I also want to bring in Dr. Alan Levy from Westport, who's calling in, and I understand that he's been on a Newtown counseling team. Dr. Levy, thank you very much for calling us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
What can you tell us about what you've been doing and how people seem to be?
For the past 48 hours or so, I've been working with the Newtown Counseling Program as crisis intervention. It's therapists from all over the state that have convened in Newtown and come together for counseling, as well as my own Westport practice. The children and the parents of the children that I treat have been extremely fearful. They didn't want to send their kids to school this morning. Throughout the state, I understand that this is the feeling, and maybe even the feeling throughout the nation. They're very angry that nothing has been done to regulate arms in the United States. We have become one of the most violent countries in the world with regard to how we kill our own, and the politicians in Washington are not doing anything about it, haven't done anything about it.
And we're going to spend a lot of this hour on the policy debate, but are you telling me that people are presenting to you in your counseling practice with the political or the policy issue top of mind?
Yes, that's right after being angry, after being fearful. And this morning, I treated two families already this morning in my local town of Westport who did not want to send their kids to school this morning and did not want to continue sending them to a place that could be as unsafe as Newtown.
What did you advise them?
I told them that their job as parents was to reassure their children that they are safe no matter where they go.
And do you think in general it's a good idea to get kids back into their routine? Obviously not if it's your sibling. Maybe you don't go to school today or tomorrow or for a week, but even in that case, how much do you advise the families that it's best to get back into the routine for the kids' sake as quickly as possible?
That is the imperative. That's what has to happen because children can't function when they are afraid. They can't learn when they're afraid. They can't live in their communities and be happy as children should be when they're afraid. And certainly the parents, we as parents, this is our worst nightmare that has happened to this community and the parents of these children or the community. It's from day one of being a parent, this is what we fear the most, that somehow we will not be able to protect our children. It's so important to come back to a normal routine of activity.
Dr. Levy, thank you very much for calling in. I really, really appreciate you being our first caller today. And let's go back to our guest, pediatrician Dr. Alex Afshar from Newtown, whose practice includes half of the children who were killed last week. Dr. Afshar, what kinds of contacts have you been having with your patients, either the parents of those children or kids from other families in town over the last few days?
Well, as soon as the names of the victims and their families were released, the authorities released, we contacted all the families and we gave them our cell phone number for them to be able to contact us whenever and wherever they need to. Since Friday night, my first call was Saturday morning from mother of a victim who did not know how to approach her 9-year-old son to tell him that his sibling was in that tragedy. Since then, we've had a number of calls, and today we've got a few appointments about parents who either have not said anything, have not been able to say anything to their other children, or don't know how to handle things themselves, or they are just seeking help, which is one of the things I advise all the parents for themselves and for the siblings to get medical advice as soon as possible. And as Dr. Levy mentioned earlier on, the best thing for families to do is to resume a normal life, as normal as it can be after this incident. Schools are still the safest place for children after their homes. They should be reassured of that. These events, they should be reassured that these events don't happen frequently. They're not common events, and they should try and resume their normal activity as much as they possibly can. However,
the odds in any school at any time are minuscule.
Yes. However, I think that all the families should seek help and advice as soon as possible. The sooner, the better the outcome.
Dr. Alex Afshar, head of the Family Health Center of Newtown. Half the victims were his patients. I grieve for you. We have Senator Blumenthal standing by, and we're going to go to him in 30 seconds. But Dr. Afshar, how are you taking care of yourself? This must be an unspeakable loss for you.
It is. I've spent all of the weekend in Newtown. I've been here since Friday, and we were here last night until the very late, going to the crisis center to help out there and kind of talking to families and people around, trying to make sense of this, and nobody can.
Dr. Afshar, good luck to you.
Thank you.
My sympathies, and thank you very much for giving us some time today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. With me now is U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. Senator, thank you for giving us a few minutes, and of course, I'm sorry it's under these circumstances.
Well, I'm sorry too, but thank you for having me.
I saw you on ABC this week yesterday saying you would be talking on the Senate floor this week about gun laws. Can you give us a preview of what you plan to say?
I'm committed to helping to transform and spur this national debate. Already it is changing with the statement by one of my colleagues, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Senator Manchin has said that he sees the need for a ban on assault weapons, and I agree with him. I've championed that kind of law in Connecticut, where we now have such a measure, a ban on the kind of AR-15s that were used in this horrendous, horrific criminal act. But also, I'm going to be advocating a ban on high-capacity magazines, again, of the type that were used in this massacre. The shooter had a number of magazines with 30 rounds each. Stronger enforcement measures on both ammunition and weapons, and mental health outreach and treatment. There's no single law that's going to be a panacea and going to prevent these kinds of incidents going forward, but we need to do more and to do something significant. And that's what I'm hearing from people in Newtown, from my former law enforcement colleagues. I was in law enforcement, both criminal and civil, as United States Attorney, Chief Federal Law Enforcement Officer, and as Attorney General for 20 years in the state of Connecticut. So I'm going to continue this kind of advocacy.
You know, while you were on ABC this week talking about the extended magazines and these weapons, Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert was on Fox News Sunday saying this.
My heart breaks also.
Oops, I'm sorry. We're going to get Congressman Gohmert up. That was my error. He's coming from another perspective, though also in pursuit of the safety of the children. And he thinks that he wishes that a teacher in the school or a principal in the school had a weapon. Listen.
Hearing the heroic stories of the principal lunging, trying to protect Chris, I wish to God she had had an M4 in her office locked up, so when she heard gunfire, she pulls it out, and she didn't have to lunge heroically with nothing in her hands, but she takes him out, takes his head off before he can kill those precious kids.
Senator Blumenthal, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I respectfully disagree. You know, the state troopers who were there talked about the weaponry that this killer brought to the school, and what they told me was that even with their body armor, even with all the weapons they normally carry, this weapon is so deadly that it would have probably prevented one of them from effectively intervening if they were alone at that scene with him coming to the school blasting away. So the practicalities are problematic, to say the least, but do we really want our schools to be armed camps with principals and teachers carrying assault weapons as they go from classroom to classroom? What kind of society would we become? And I think there are larger values at stake here. We need to do more about gun violence prevention. This president spoke very eloquently about our failing our children, and I think that ought to be the place where we come from on this issue.
Is it possible that both things are true, that assault weapons and extended capacity clips should be banned, and that the principal of each school should also be armed and trained, or someone in the school?
I'd want to hear from the educators and teachers and staff about what they think about such an idea. I tend, as a parent of four children, to be somewhat skeptical and doubtful about whether I want my children to be going to a school where their safety depends on the principal taking shots at someone who may be suspicious or someone who may be seeking to do them harm. I prefer to rely on law enforcement professionals. If it comes to that and our schools need to be armed in that way, better to have people who know how to use weapons, who are trained, and who actually are in the profession of protecting people in that way.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, thank you for giving us some time today. We appreciate it. I'm next going to put on two callers together. I don't know if they know each other, but two callers from Reading, Connecticut, right by Newtown, where apparently schools are in lockdown today, and I'm not sure what that means. But Vanessa in Reading and Michelle in Reading, you're both on the air. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Brian.
Michelle, you there?
Hi, how are you?
Do you know each other?
No, I don't. Who's your child, Vanessa?
Harry, Jackson, and Kian.
Oh. My children are Amelia, Maya, Green. I actually just got a text message about 20 minutes ago saying that they were locked down because apparently there's somebody in Ridgefield. There's a suspicious person in Ridgefield. So they went into lockdown for about a half an hour or so. But I guess my question is this what we're going to have to go through every single time there's a suspicious person? We're going to have to lock all the doors and not let anybody in? I mean, what kind of a world do we live in, you know?
Michelle, you heard the same thing about lockdown, right?
Yes, I did.
What do you...
That was Michelle. This is Vanessa.
Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me. So, Vanessa, you heard the same thing.
Yes. I actually heard about it on Facebook first before the school contacted us, and then I... you know, was trying to scour for information and saw on the news that there was a suspicious person with a rifle at the Branchville train station, which is on the border of Ridgefield and Reading. We are to the east of Newtown. We're right next door. And Ridgefield is now to the west of us. And our children are no longer in what's called lockdown, which is where they go and hide, like they had to do in Sandy Hook. But right now we're in lockout. We're at the school, at the elementary school. There's supposed to be a winter carnival for the kindergartners. But the parents, nobody is allowed in at the moment. The children are not hiding anymore, but we're not allowed in.
And this is the kind of thing that's going to happen, especially in the social media age where... as you say, you heard it first on Facebook. We are now looking at conflicting reports where the Hartford Courant is reporting that the lockdown has been lifted in Reading, though
it has been.
Other people are saying that it's still on. And, of course, you know, word gets out so quickly, and I'm glad to hear one of you who called to say there is a lockdown is now confirming it.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Michelle?
My daughter just texted me and said the lockdown is over.
So your daughter
is... That must be at the middle school or high school.
Yeah, at the middle school.
So your middle school daughter is being allowed to text in the middle of the school day? I guess under these circumstances, and honestly, I'm laughing, but I don't know whether this is good or bad or makes it better or worse that the kids are so involved with this information themselves.
Actually, I think it makes it worse. I'm at the Reading Elementary School. We're not allowed in. So lockdown is lifted, but lockout is still enforced, where uh-huh. nobody is allowed in. So the children can go about the activities of the day. The problem with the texting, the middle school the other day, the 7th and 8th graders, on Friday when it happened, started receiving texts, I guess, at some point during the day. And there was all this conflicting information that there were all different schools affected, and it was terrifying for a lot of them. So the principal had to actually get these kids together and talk to them and tell them what happened before the parents were allowed to. That was only for the 7th and 8th graders. The 5th and 6th graders were supposedly oblivious. And when my son, my 5th grader, came home, he was oblivious. But we had people, our best friends were, luckily, had just moved away recently from the Sandy Hook area. They were at the elementary school. My friend's daughter would have been there. But we did also know, you know, a child who was killed. So it's been very difficult.
And I'm very sorry for, you know, your personal connection to that. But what do you think is the right thing for the school to do?
I think, you know, they were doing the right thing in some ways by getting the information out quickly. The first email that we got was conflicting on Friday and said, in light of Newtown, we didn't even know what was happening at home yet. We hadn't turned on the news and hadn't heard. So it was like, what? And then I think that talking to them and getting them at least some of the information at the middle school to quell the rumors, because that first day, I mean, we were told there was a suspicious van coming from Sandy Hook on the way toward Danbury. We're in that direction. So then, you know, my friends and I are like looking around going, what do we do? What do we do? And
right.
Is it more than one school? You know, and the rumors that start building are very difficult. So I think what the school did was correct in talking to them to say that something did happen. It was in Newtown. We just got allowed in here now.
Oh, good.
So the lockout is now lifted at the elementary.
So go in, be with your child.
But I worry about the kids' psyche and their... How scared they've been.
I understand. Michelle, any last thing you want to say?
Well, I just want to say, is this going to become the norm where if there's a suspicious person anywhere, are they going to have to go into lockdown? And how much learning can you get if you're hiding in a closet?
And hopefully, with one or another of our guests, we'll get the two of you some kind of reasonable answer to that. I certainly don't have one. And Michelle and Vanessa from Reading, thank you both very much for calling in. And I'm glad to hear that those lockdowns and lockouts have now been lifted. And let's try to get a partial answer from Congressman John Larson, Democrat from the Hartford area, who joins us briefly now. Congressman, thank you very much for coming on with us.
Happy to be on with you, Brian.
And I know you're here to talk about gun control, but you hear these other kinds of policy issues. In effect, they're very local school district level policy issues that were being raised by the two callers from Reading. What were you thinking as you were listening to that?
Well, I think they need a meeting of the Board of Education, and the Board of Education needs to lay out the policy, and the parents have to participate. And then, as one of the women said, do we want to go into lockdown when anyone approaches? Do we have certain procedures? And then identify people with it. I think given the circumstances, and probably, I know if I were the principal, I'd err on the side of caution after what we've witnessed last Friday.
And I guess if there's a period of time window where copycats are more likely, then there would be an abundance of caution right now that may not be at the same level. And I don't know what's right in terms of the levels to trigger lockdowns or lockouts and whatever they actually mean. But maybe there's an abundance of caution right now that wouldn't be considered necessary after a period of time.
But what we're really talking about here is you're talking about symptoms. And what we really need to focus on is the cure. And it's a combination. It's just not restricting assault ban weapons, making sure that there's universal background checks so that nobody with a mental health issue gets a gun. Right now we have a terrorist on a terrorist list to go and get a gun. We got to close these loopholes. We have to do whatever we can on that side. But as important, if not more important, is the mental health side and identifying with evidence-based information and data the need for us to treat young kids and identify these issues early on and then get them the treatment that they need. Right now, Brian, sadly, and there are a profusion of articles yesterday in the papers about this, the only remedy is to send someone to prison. Now, what parent, even if they feel like, geez, I think my kid's got some problems, is going to turn around and say, yeah, but am I going to put him in prison? And so I think we've got to address this issue comprehensively and on a balanced and pragmatic basis. I do think you can join forces, actually, with people in the NRA who say, look, they don't want to have what happened on Friday. They're as aghast as everyone else. But common sense, practical, universal checks. And there's no – the troubling thing, Brian, is there's no one panacea here. It's a comprehensive effort. But I know this. To do nothing is to be complicit because we know this will happen again. And we can't put our heads in the sand. We can't just lower the flags, pay our deep and abiding respects, grieve along with the families, help rebuild the community, and not address the underlying problem.
Two things real quick before you go.
We're complicit.
Our time is short.
And not only is the United States Congress complicit, but so would all America for not rallying around this point on behalf of parents and children and school safety. As the president said last night, if we don't get it right with our children, then we just simply haven't gotten it right.
What do you say to Congressman Gohmert and others who believe that one of the remedies should actually be to allow teachers, maybe even require a principal to, and he didn't put it this way precisely, but maybe require a principal or somebody in a school to have a gun and have firearms training?
Well, I think it's I would make
you know
make
that's
sure
all that my, all over conservative talk radio all weekend. That's the solution.
Yeah, and listen, maybe that works in Texas where Louie Gohmert is, you know, there's the states have local jurisdiction over their education system, so maybe that's something that works for Texas. Other people have suggested they have armed guards, but you know, frankly, given global competition and where we need to go with reading and writing and where our kids stand with literacy, I would hope we would be using our resources to train our teachers, our principals, and all of our staff to make them more academic and allow the Public Safety Committee to do its work and its job and to work hand in glove with the various institutions to make sure our schools are protected. Others have said, hey, look, we got to put a policeman in every school. I don't know if that's feasible either, and it may be an overreaction, but you need to have a dialogue and a conversation so that in not rejecting anyone's ideas out of hand, including Louie Gohmert's, but working as a community to come up with the best solution for your particular town.
Congressman John Larson, Democrat from Central and West Connecticut, including Hartford, Windsor, Bristol, Middletown, Portland, thank you very much for giving us a few minutes.
You're welcome, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with more coverage and a community call-in on what's in your hearts, what's on your minds with respect to Newtown, Connecticut, 212-433-WNYC. And if you're from there, right around there, especially, you'll get first priority on the phones this hour, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know, we played President Obama from the memorial service last night, where he read the first names of all 20 children who were killed on Friday. And someone on our comments page said, hey, you know, you should also read the names of the adults killed if you're going to do that. So point taken. Rachel DeVino, Anne-Marie Murphy, Lauren Rousseau, Mary Sherlock, Victoria Soto, Dawn Hochsprung, and Nancy Lanza, the adults killed by Adam Lanza on Friday. As many of you know, we've been talking a lot about China on the show after my recent visit there, but here is one conversation about China I never expected to have. You know, on the same day as the Newtown shooting, a man in China went on a school rampage of his own, stabbing 22 children, eerily similar. But China has strict gun laws. The man used a knife, and horrific as it is anyway, none of those children died. Evan Osnos wrote about this for The New Yorker yesterday, and he joins us now from where, Evan? Beijing?
That's right, Brian.
Thank you so much for giving us some time and staying up late, China time. What do you know about what happened? Where was the school? Who was the attacker? Who were the victims?
It was in a village called Chengpeng, which is not a place anybody had really ever heard of. It's in Hunan province, which is an inland area, rural stretch. And the attacker in this case was a 36-year-old man named Min Yingjun, and he went into the school right around the time the kids were coming in the morning. He had a kitchen knife that he'd taken from a neighbor's house. And over the course of a half an hour, which is how long it took before police were able to get in there and subdue him, he attacked 22 children and one adult. And nobody died. And I think the fact that these children were hospitalized. In some cases, there were seven of them who were seriously injured, but all are expected to live, has been, as for obvious reasons, a striking contrast with what happened in Connecticut.
I read that in China there's been a string of such attacks at schools. What do you know about how common this is?
You know, it started to pick up in about 2010, 2 years ago. I remember when we started to see a flurry of these. It was in the springtime, and they all conformed to a familiar pattern, and what became a familiar pattern, which was that the attackers were middle-aged men, frustrated for some reason, whether it was romantic or professional. In some cases, they had debts. And there was a belief at the time that since this really came out of nowhere, there hadn't been a school attack in China of any real size since 2004, that there did seem to be some sort of copycat effect, that after the first one was generated a lot of fear and attention, then there were others that followed in other parts of the country. And, you know, the explanation for it is interesting and says something about where China is these days. People tend to say, yes, of course, these guys were sick. We know that. But there is also clear evidence that they did not receive the kind of care and support that they might have. And this is a society that, after all, has, as you know, been transformed overnight over the course of 30 years. And the social service network has frayed, and people feel in some cases that they can't keep up with the changes. Maybe they're not benefiting economically. Maybe they're not. They don't feel that they know where their lives are going. And so there's a sense, you often hear it described in Chinese as a kind of spiritual crisis, a moral crisis. And oftentimes these attacks are explained in the context of that.
What are the gun laws like in China?
They're very strict. There are no private guns of any kind. In fact, police officers don't even carry guns in most cases. And that's one of the reasons why these cases have all been knife attacks. Typically, the knives people have in their homes in China are cleavers. That's what they cook with. And very often, it's a grim fact that those are the knives that they use. And in fact, the Chinese government is is very aware of the fact that knives are the chosen weapon of choice. When they have a big political meeting like they did recently, where the party, the Communist Party, gets together to put forward its new leaders, they actually will limit the sale of kitchen knives in the stores because they're trying to reduce the likelihood of those being used as weapons.
Explain the connection that you were trying to make a minute ago that I don't really understand between the disaffectation of some men in a changing China and the fact that they would take it out on children in a school, presumably children they don't know for the most part. Why on kids as opposed to in any other way?
Well, nobody really has a particularly good answer to that, except for the fact that it is a form in its own bizarre way of protest. And at least that's the way it's been interpreted by Chinese people. But this has become a way that if somebody is desperate to get attention, there is no more dramatic way to do it than this. And, you know, in the end, in some of the cases, whether it's in China or in other countries, it's not always clear that the attacker who goes after a school is, in fact, targeting children as children. It may, in fact, be for similar reasons, that this is a person who has obviously come unhinged and is seeking to make the most spectacular destructive impact that they can.
When I was in China, I learned how, while the state controls state media very meticulously, that there is a social media environment, especially on Weibo, which is the sort of the Chinese equivalent of Twitter, where there's a lot more open conversation. And I wonder if you've been reading it and if you see a social media comparison taking place there between the China attack and the Connecticut attack. Did we lose Evan? Evan, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
The social media in China is actually extraordinarily robust. People are on there all day. They're making comments. They're debating. Some of it is censored. The government keeps a very close eye on it, gets rid of comments, for instance, about any leaders who are in office or about issues they think are too sensitive. But that still allows for a bandwidth of pretty intense debate. So over the last few days, you've seen an interesting phenomenon. People's reaction online has been twofold to the comparison between the attacks in China and the attack in Connecticut. On the one hand, they're frankly bewildered by the fact that the United States, which they consider to be the most prosperous and successful civilization we've ever seen, is, in a strange way, almost accustomed to the idea that every few months we'll have one of these. And they find that just very hard to process, I think, the way a lot of us do in the United States. I think then, on the other hand, though, they've been impressed over the last few days by the response that Americans have had to this tragedy. They are looking at the way, for instance, that American political figures have spoken publicly about it, have expressed themselves. A lot of Chinese people noted online that President Obama was emotional in his press conference, because the contrast with Chinese leaders is striking. The Chinese new president, Xi Jinping, has not mentioned the attack in Hunan. He won't mention it. As a matter of routine, the Chinese government does not like to draw attention to these attacks because it sees them as a form of chaos, as an indication of some way that their control is not complete. And they don't like to draw attention to it because they think it might lead to copycat attacks. So what you've seen is a lot of, over the last few days, on the one hand, people being kind of astonished that the United States allows this phenomenon to happen, these kinds of school attacks to continue. And then on the other hand, they're quite admiring of the way that we talk about it openly in the media, and we hash out what we believe on both sides of the issue.
Evan Osnos for The New Yorker in Beijing on the Connecticut school attack and the China school attack. Evan, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Brian.
And back to some more of your calls now. Ellen in Rockland, you're on WNYC. Ellen, thank you for calling in.
I'm a trauma and bereavement specialist, and I've worked a lot with children, and I've been listening to all the conversation, but I just did want to make the point about grieving and letting other children and families know what's going on. I strongly have seen in my practice, and I think research indicates that grief is also a physical manifestation, and you really have to acknowledge grief. When grief happens, there are certain physiological things that happen, and the body has to be allowed to grieve. And I think even for children, kind of going on with one's life and just pretending that nothing happened, it's later in life that will come out quite negatively if there's no attention paid. The best thing is to acknowledge that something horrible has happened and to do the grieving and the crying and speaking about the person who was lost. And children also need to do that. Children are much more resilient than adults seem to be aware of. And children need to be told often honestly that something happened, that somebody was not, just took a long trip, but that somebody was killed or is dead. And the children should be able to process that in their minds and maybe write letters to their friends or their siblings, you know, in heaven. But I just strongly feel that grief has to be acknowledged. And I just wanted to make that point.
I'm glad you did as a grief mm-hmm. counselor. Tell me one other thing, because I've heard people say, let the kids take the lead, that in many cases, or at least in some cases, it's the parent who's actually going to be more distraught or think that the child needs to have it brought up to the child by the parent, when maybe the child is processing it in whatever way internally, and it's worse for the child to be hit with it by the parent unless the child brings it up in some way. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think that parents can. The child is most, especially small children, are going to be very clingy with their parents, even children who hear the news. And as other people have said, children get re-traumatized every time they hear the news, especially children not in the community. They're going to think it's happening again. So the parents have to assure them it was one time. But the parents do need to speak to children. Sometimes siblings are often left out. When parents are grieving, they close out the sibling, and that can be disastrous. Parents need to include the children with their grief. Let them know. Speak honestly with them. Let them know that the parent is very sad, but that they can acknowledge that the child is going to be very sad, too, to have lost their sibling or friend. And let the child express themselves. I've worked with children where children want to write letters to their friend or sibling in heaven, mm-hmm. or they want to draw. Children are very visual, especially at that age, so they might want to draw what their feelings are rather than talk about it. Sometimes counselors want children to talk about all their feelings, and that's something that children, especially very young children, cannot. They're not really developmentally able to discuss their feelings, but they can manifest in other ways. They can do it through play therapy or through drawing something, mm-hmm. or maybe through writing a letter of what they want to say. So it's a matter of really attending to children, even while the adults are in the midst of their own grief and loss.
Ellen, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate all your advice. Yeah. And okay. John in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, John.
I'm a homicide investigator in the tri-state area. My wife's a third-grade teacher, and I have a first grader and a third grader. So this incident has really hit, extremely hard.
I guess so.
That being said, I'm just finding myself getting angrier and angrier at the lack of vision with the gun control issue. There hasn't been a new idea mentioned in the gun control issue in over a decade. Nobody is coming up with any shift in the paradigm. It's the left is coming up with the same ideas they've had that just aren't working. They're not working in the inner city. They wouldn't have prevented this incident. And the right seems to only be answering to them, contradicting them at every corner, but nobody's trying to come up with a solution. They keep talking about the assault weapons ban. That was in effect during Columbine. It did nothing. Those pieces of equipment are out there, and there's no law we're going to be able to write that will get them off the street.
That is another
aspect. The number of cops that have been hurt this year is astronomical. Look in New York City, the number of police officers shot this year. But yet there is nobody's offering any clear vision on what we can do to get a handle on this and what new things we can do.
Do you have any ideas, or have you been hearing any new ideas to get us off the old debates and onto something more effective?
I haven't heard one new debate, and it's got to be I can't remember anybody coming up with a solution that hasn't already been rehashed. An absolute ban on guns is just not practical. It's not going to happen. There's too many people that have guns. There's too many guns out there. I mean, if we were to do an absolute federal ban on possession of weapons, which will never happen in this country, it would be ineffective to begin with because there's too many that are already out there that we don't know about. And on the other side, for the Republicans to glibly say, let's arm school principals, I mean, obviously he hasn't met many school principals. There's not many I know that would want to be armed. But that being said, to come back at that idea and say it's outright ridiculous, I'm sure there are principals out there that could have a responsible choice about that and be fine with it. But there doesn't seem to be any dialogue at all. All it seems to be is posturing and grandstanding, and I can't tell you how frustrating it is to listen to this over and over again. I mean, I've had an idea for a while that maybe we should have some sort of absolute liability with gun ownership. I don't know how practical that would be, but
what does that mean?
Something. Excuse me?
Meaning if somebody else used your gun in a crime, that you would be liable?
If you buy a gun in, say, South Carolina, and that gun is used in a crime in New York City, and there's no clear, and on paper, you're the last registered owner of that gun, yeah. Maybe you should be liable for anything that happened in New York City. Or if your son goes into your gun locker and takes out your AR-15 or your Bushmaster and shoots up a school. Mm-hmm. You know, and in this case, that wouldn't have done much, but maybe that person should be liable. I mean, that's the only new thing I can think of, because I don't think that we'll ever get to a point with the way that the Constitution's written, the way the laws are written now, and the way the Supreme Court is now, and I don't, the laws that have been, the rulings that the Supreme Court has had, I don't think there's any way around it, that we're never going to have an outright ban on assault weapons or on firearms. With the hunting culture we have, and it's impractical to think that we ever would get to that point.
John, thank you. I got to go because the hour is over, but thank you very much for calling
in. I really wish somebody would come up with it. It's not going to be me that comes up with it, but I'd like to hear something different from somebody.
Well, let's see if anybody can take your challenge. Listeners, our comments page is open always, but open right now for, among everything else, your suggestions for getting us off this stuck place on the gun control debate and new ideas. Post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And our program continues.